We have two guests with us today in the Art Cell Lab, and we welcome you to Creative Disturbance again. And we have an alumni who worked in the Art Cell Lab before, and he now presently is seeking new career opportunities, and he's exploring his pathways. Anvit is with us today. And we have another member of the Art Cell Lab, Yusra, who's just started working in the Art Cell Lab a few months ago as a community manager, and she works in different projects for Artica and Creative Disturbance as well, and maintaining trust between different producers. So Anvit, why don't you tell us about yourself and how you met Roger Molina in the Art Cell Lab, and
sure,
how did you collaborate on different projects?
Sure. So I'm an ex Art Cell Lab member, like Ritwik mentioned. I was actually a master's student in computer science, and I was interested in a sound design course that I eventually ended up doing under Scott. So during the course, or rather after the course, Scott mentioned an opening in the Art Science Lab for a sonification project that he was doing. And because I was really interested in sound design, and he kind of saw that I had the technical know-how from the programming world as well to work on that sonification project, he asked me if I was interested in. And I eventually ended up taking it, and that's how I got into the Art Sign Lab.
Oh,
soon after, he introduced me to Roger, and I got involved in the Creative Disturbance project as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So, and then I later joined in and worked for the website that you worked for, and I'm glad to meet the two person who actually worked for it. And I never got to meet the person who made the website, so I'm happy to meet you today. And Yusra, who joined our lab like a few months ago, actually came in looking for some interesting interdisciplinary projects that she wanted to be a part of, because she was interested in cognitive sciences, brain health, and she's currently pursuing her master's in cognitive sciences. And
it's actually called Applied Cognition and Neuroscience.
Yeah. And so how did you come across the Art Cell Lab, and tell us your story.
So my story is that I decided to go on the track of the human-computer interaction track within the master's program. And I asked my advisor, and she kind of like showed me the path to ATEC. And she said, you could go there and talk to some people and see if this is something that would be interesting to you. Mm-hmm. And then when I started the neuroscience program, I was initially interested in learning about consciousness. And I did my honors thesis for my undergrad in stress management and meditation. So I wanted to come up with a way to create a game that would teach people how to meditate. And I was thinking, like, now that I'm hearing all this really interesting stuff about VR, I came and I learned about Professor Ryan McMahon, and I decided to knock on his door. And he was super helpful, except for the fact that he told me to go learn Unity and C Sharp. I mean, he was on the right track for sure. But the biggest thing was that I have zero computer experience whatsoever. I mean, I still have trouble using a printer sometime. So, and there I was. But then I did it. I sat in front of the computer and downloaded Unity, and I did first point shooter and all the tutorials and everything, and I copied some C-sharp codes, and so I got to that point. But I came across Professor Cassini, and I said, hey, I'm interested in UX. So then I had to kind of decide whether I wanted to go and learn VR or if I wanted to go into UX. And then I guess, like, you could kind of do both, but I wanted to start with UX. So that's why I'm here. And I wanted to be a part of this lab, and there was a position opening for a community manager, and I guess I kind of fit the role. It's still an evolving position that I have.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And so there's two contrary pages here. So you have experience in computer languages, and then on the other hand, even I'm on the other hand, actually. I'm very scared of touching computer languages. I get scared seeing the letters and numbers sometimes.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. How do you make a user of a computer language get more comfortable with the interface? With the interface, with what you're working on, like the computer, and why does computer language always look like alphabets and numbers?
I mean, it doesn't have to look like alphabets and numbers. I would say that, you know, languages are just syntax. Some of them look, some of the modern languages look a lot like just English. Like if you, Ruby, which is one of my favorite programming language, at times looks just like English. It doesn't have any weird, you know, it doesn't have weird brackets hanging around if you don't want it to. It doesn't have any complex, you know, random syntax that doesn't actually mean anything in English. There's also languages like MaxMSP, which, I mean, given that it's primarily
I started programming with MaxMSP because
it's a very visual language.
Yeah. Right? Scott took me to the sound design studio first, right, and he showed me the thing, and I was like, "Whoa, is this a programming language?" So I was shocked. And so that's the main problem with many people. Like, even how did you mug up those C# texts?
Well,
did you mug it up? Did you heart it?
I didn't even try. I just copied a code that I saw online and put it into Unity, and then it worked. There were some errors. Ryan took a look at it, and he was like, "There's some errors, but you know, you can fix it. You'll eventually learn."
Mm-hmm.
But he said, "If you understand the concept, it's a piece of cake." But I never had the chance to like completely understand the concept.
So
because
what do you think was the brick that was stopping you, or what was the obstacle
that was stopping
you to go get comfortable
with it? I think that I have at this point I still have no language background, but I have this like fear of like that I'm not gonna understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've always had trouble, like this happened to me when I was in school, like I had trouble with mathematics. And now I think it's coming in the same direction where I really want to learn. I've signed up for like 17 courses on Udemy, you know, but like it's been challenging. And I think now maybe this semester I have a little bit more time, I'll try to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't found any courses that are teaching the concepts. And I think that's, if I understand the concept, I will understand them for sure. But I also, I was advised, and I could be wrong, because back in January of this year, I was part of a startup company that was doing an artificial intelligence boot camp. So I was there. I was the VP of marketing for that company. And my job was to basically talk to students about how easy it is to learn to become a data scientist and go into AI. And the minimum requirement is to know Python.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I was learning the basic concepts, or I guess it was like more like the philosophy behind AI, I realized that, you know, the instructor kept saying like Python is the easiest language to learn. If you're going to learn a language, start out with Python. So I guess maybe I'll start with that, but then I have no intention of going in AI as of right now. So maybe JavaScript I'll start with.
Similarly, as how she's facing difficulty in this, what was there any difficulty you faced when you started your master's here?
Well, not my
subject.
I mean, there are subjects that are definitely not my favorites. But I mean, everyone has their comfort zones and whatnot. I believe that, like, when it comes to at least programming language, there are two aspects of it. One is the syntax, which is pretty easy to learn once you get the hang of it, and it's getting easier still. Like, there's sites out there like Codecademy, if you haven't heard of them, that kind of teach you at least the syntax bit of it with really simple, you know, baby step programming exercises. And it's I believe it's at least better than what it used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
The tougher part is the concepts, and honestly, there isn't an easy way around it. Like, there's for example, courses like advanced OS, like it's all concept, hardly any you know, syntax related trouble that you'll have, and you just have to pay attention, and you know, there's no easy way around it.
And that's what I figured. Even teaching methods in computer languages, teaching methods, like there are very different types of teaching methods in computer languages.
Mm-hmm.
Some are very textbook faced. Some are very practical. They ask you to solve very simple problems in class. They ask you to explore.
Right.
And when I studied in India, it was just sitting and getting from textbook and knowing
what is C
and what is bubble sort, what is simple sort,
right?
And knowing not where to apply it.
Right.
So how do you think the structure of teaching should be in computer languages?
I think, as far as languages are concerned, I think it should all be focused on, you know, teaching by doing, because theory doesn't help with languages.
Yeah.
Pretty much all I've learned is by working on simple programs, and that the whole Hello World thing exists for a reason. It exists because, you know, for you to get comfortable with a language, the first thing every language does is, you know, teach you how to do the most basic thing in that language is,
yes.
you know, print something on the screen.
Yeah.
So I think for languages, learning by doing is the way to go. And I'm glad that a lot of learning methods are leaning that way.
Yeah.
I see. So I also did this thing recently for for grade school
mm-hmm.
students. They have like summer camps. And I think there's like a ton of them in Dallas and in Plano area where they're teaching children how to code.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are like in sixth or seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're starting out very early. So I saw, because they had a little setup, it was like big, it was a conference where they have all the after school programs come together.
Right.
So they were a little booth for this after school program where the students were like on the screen and it would, you know, teach them like color the cat green and they would like use the brackets and stuff. And I was like, this is pretty cool. If I was taught, if I was going to gamify the coding part of it, then
mm-hmm.
maybe it would be easier for me to learn,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think now they're starting to teach it at a much earlier age because my sister, she is in eighth grade right now. And she's on, I think there's coding on Khan Academy too. From
there
what
is.
I understand. So she's on there and she'll just practice it because she wants to be ready for that, you know, college prep and all that stuff. So I see that and I'm like, man, that's really what I'm missing out on is I didn't get to do all that and now I'm here and, you know, at this point it's like, where do I start?
And you were interested in exploring brain neurosciences. So what made you take applied cognitive neurosciences?
I think that I wasn't initially like interested in like going into surgery or, you know, working in a hospital setting. I wanted to understand more of the technology and the human computer interaction
mm-hmm.
part of it, like as far as like what are some of the designs and why people are attracted to them, what makes one person addicted to something, basically the cognitive aspects, right? Like certain colors, why people will be more interested in that, sounds. So the psychology and the cognitive part of the neuroscience is what I was interested in.
And what was the first thing that took you, like stuck to you as something very new when you went there, like something that you never knew about?
I think metacognition is something that I'm really interested in, and meta decision making,
mm-hmm.
Because I really wanted to get into people's head and see why people make the decisions they do. And there is an entire process as to why one person makes a decision they do. You know, like, it's like, it obviously happens in a split second, but there's an entire cycle of how we come across decisions, you know, like, how do we decide that we're hungry and we're gonna go for that bagel or something like that, you know? So that's what I was initially interested in the decision-making process. Then I got a little bit more interested in the factors behind decision-making, so, or body physiology, and then I discovered there's an entire brain in our gut, which also helps us make decisions. So I mean, I'm interested in basically why people are making decisions that the, you know, what decisions they make, why they're attracted to certain things, their behavior
mm-hmm.
part of it versus.
So you had a sales background, right? You interacted with a lot of people around, and you, as you jumped a few jobs here and there, and you were meeting a lot of different people, did that aspect help you in a lot? Because you like to, I think observation might be your obsession, right?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail there. I think the reason why I'm so interested in people's behavior is because I was so interested in understanding marketing and sales. And I took a marketing class just over the summer because I wanted to hack into this field of neuromarketing. To see, you know, what are some of the, you know, ways that people are marketing products
mm-hmm.
to consumers. Right now, like, you see the big wave of Amazon coming in,
mm-hmm.
and now people are grocery shopping on their phone instead of going into the store. I really think that's going to have a huge impact on the number or the sales, because I think that when we go to a grocery store, there's a reason why some things are at the end of the store, because they want you to walk all the way to the end of the store so you can see all these other things,
mm-hmm.
so you can put them in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, when you're sitting on the phone, you know 5 things you want, you'll order them and get them delivered. So you're probably saving a lot of money by just shopping on your phone. So now, the next thing is that if I was going to think from a perspective of Amazon, how do I get people more interested in kind of picking up those extra things, you know? Because on an app, you just type in the search, it comes up, you click add to the cart, and you check out. So how do you get consumers to be interested in picking up that extra bag of Dorito or, you know, things that they don't need, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a whole different aspect. Like, when you're in a store, you're hungry. Your senses are there. You hear the sounds of, let's say you go into a Target, you hear the popping of the popcorn. And when I was a district manager for Target, I used to always, I mean, I every store I would walk in, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to have some popcorn. Because you smell it, you hear it, that's your first purchase usually. And while you're at the popcorn place, you always get a coffee next to it. So that's your first thing. And then you see flowers, you smell, you know, cupcakes, cookies being baked. So you pick up those things. And they're usually in the front of the store. But now, like I said, you know, with Amazon and Instacart and all these apps, I have noticed myself, I spend much less on groceries now because I just click, 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 and then what I need comes home. And I don't have as many unhealthy snacks in my house anymore. so that's really what I'm interested in. So that's, again, all about decision making, right?
Mm-hmm.
In some way?
Yeah.
I think there's, like, what's interesting is there's this whole other aspect to it where, like, you might not, it might not be there with food, but with a lot of other things, the whole advertising thing kind of gets in your head and it shows you exactly what you might be looking for. And you end up, like, at least for me, I ended up purchasing a lot more gadgets or books that I didn't plan to. I still had other books on my read list or other gadgets that kind of did the task, but I ended up purchasing it because, you know, they advertise something that I thought I needed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes back to user experience, right?
Yeah.
So Amazon is doing an excellent job on showing, hey, you're buying this, you might also be interested
mm-hmm.
in this. And then that's how you add the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, with some of the apps that I use, you know, it's not as enticing. Like, it doesn't invite you to buy other things. It's more
mm-hmm.
like search and get to it. But I think the end goal for these companies is to make the online experience just as exciting as, you know, the store experience. And I think it's possible. I think they can definitely do that, you know.
So what do you think, like, nowadays advertising sometimes is over-suggestive, right? Like, sometimes when you go on YouTube, you get really irritated seeing that ad and seeing that suggested video next. And sometimes it's wrong. So what do you do to balance that between overloading the audience with too much, or just being minimal and showing a few, like putting of buttons here and there, like very sneaky buttons, which works well?
I think that I read this somewhere, and actually no, I attended the Big Design Conference, and there was a talk on marketing, and I think, like, with millennials, the data says that we look on an ad maximum like 7 seconds to get what it's trying to sell to us. Anything after that is just kind of useless information. So I think, and I'm not, you know, I can't back this up because I haven't looked at the statistics myself, but I do think that I agree, because if you think about it, how fast do we scroll on Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom. It's like 1 second. We get it. There is, you know, like, I have a lot of shoes on my Facebook.
Yeah.
So I get it immediately. And if
sometimes things that are not, that you're not searching for just catch your attention and you just go inside that. It's just like your search, your everyday Google searches. Sometimes you Google search one thing and your next thing you're in some topic which that you never even bothered to
right.
care about, right?
Right.
So it's always and that part of the human brain aspect is interesting, because there is one inner feeling inside the brain which tells you, just go for that one. You don't want that one, but still go for it. Just go check it out. And once you click that, it's like a, what do you call it? The closed,
yeah.
Closure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I mentioned that I signed up for like 17 Udemy courses. And the reason for that is because it was advertised to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's why. I didn't want to sign up for all of them, you know, but it's just like it was.
And similarly, his website. Anuj's website, which is basically a small Nintendo, like a Game Boy game, where you open up and you're faced with this web page, you're clueless, what the hell is going on? And you start playing with it and you're like, oh shit, this is a game. so that's the exciting element is always what gets to you. So
yeah, I mean, that's what I was going for. Like, the idea was a lot of web designers are going to have, you know, websites where they showcase their
it's
going to
be the
work.
Same home about. So you wanted a way where you found that out through the game, right? Yeah. So it's almost like narrative, like how Mihai Nadine tells it in his class. So yeah, on a concluding note, I want to ask you one last question. 20 years from now,
mm-hmm.
where do you think the brain is going to be and where do you think the computer is going to be?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I mean, the brain's pretty much hasn't changed in all of these years, right? Like, she's mentioned advertising.
Yeah.
Even back in the day, before the days of all of these endless feeds, let's say you're going to a music store. That's the first thing that got you. A lot of album covers sold the albums rather than the music itself.
Yeah.
A lot of album covers were statements rather than, you know.
Yeah.
So that hasn't changed all that much. What I think will change is the amount of the amount of content that we consume is definitely changing, and the way we kind of get inside the brain and, you know, irk you to go for that thing, that's what needs to be seen.
Yeah. And what do you think?
I think that we will have an extension of our brain.
So a new brain?
Yeah, I really honestly, I don't know if it's in 20 years, it could be more, but I do see that. And I already feel that our phone right now is an extension of our consciousness. Because it's the last thing that we see at night, the first thing that we see in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're stressed out, we grab it, you know, we're looking at Facebook or whatever. And I'm sure you guys have noticed, sometimes you pick it up and you're like, when did I even pick my phone up? I don't recall that, right?
And you're already logged into an app and you don't know how you logged into that app. Right?
Yeah, that's what happens to me. And you've been scrolling for like, 30 seconds or 40 seconds, and then you realize, wow, I have like an assignment I'm supposed to complete or this or that. So I think that you will eventually have an extension of your brain,
mm-hmm.
Which could be, and this is going to call sci-fi, but I think it could either be planted in your brain to kind of take you to clear it out for you, because right now there's too much advertising, so much noise, and it's way too much noise for us. We're consuming so much information that we would need so many filters to kind of like understand the message behind it.
And to the extent that we get addicted to that noise too.
Yeah.
After a while.
Yeah.
So
I believe there's a positive side to these things as well. Like we started off discussing about programming and languages. So most of us programmers don't really keep all that stuff in our heads as much as we used to back in the day. You know, because a lot of it is stuff that you can look up in a couple of seconds. That makes us a lot more efficient.
Yeah.
We don't need to have like tens of thousands of books or notes hanging around. We're far more organized. You know that's something that someone's already done. We quickly Google it, we find it on Stack Overflow, it's done.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a positive side to these things too.
There's definitely a huge positive side to it, but I think that I see an increase more in the negative now than the positive. And that's why I was interested in meditation, because I think I see that as a potential solution to cancel out the noise.
Like a cleansing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's becoming more and more difficult. It's becoming more difficult for me. I'm like someone who preaches meditation and I have a hard time doing it, you know? And then I see like for our parents, I mean, so my parents are from Pakistan. My mom doesn't know much about using computers at all, but she's addicted to Facebook,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like she'll be on Facebook for like 2 hours straight at night, and she's like, I don't even know when I picked up my phone. So I'm like, oh, so it's not just us, it's everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel that it's going to be an extension of our consciousness, of our brain, and I think technology will help us improve our brain in some way.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, thanks both of you for sharing your stories,
mm-hmm.
and hope you guys get to know what you want.
Thank you.